This is Cat's Podcast, episode number 44. In this special episode, I'm talking to Steph Sargent. Steph is a licensed hypnotherapist and counselor, owner of the Heal Therapy Center in Bali, and a loving mom of a one-year-old. Steph recently got into a horrible car accident, leaving her with severe injuries, internal bleeding of several organs, a series of strokes, and a 12-day stay in the intense care unit. And she was faced with a choice of life or death. Seeing her now, she's a living, radiant example of the power of self-healing, a power that resides within all of us, within body and mind, and that we can access when we apply the right techniques, mindset, and willpower. We are chatting about the accident itself, her near-death experience, her powerful healing journey, and the practices she applied, showing us that we have the power to turn immense pain into purpose when we set our minds to it. Now, before you jump in, pause for a second and please subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. By hitting that subscribe button, you really help me grow this show. Thank you so much. And now, enjoy this deep conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Steph. I'm super honored to have you here and talking about, well, your recent deep experience. And I actually want to leave most of the talking to you. So just to give a very brief intro, you're living on Bali. You were on a holiday or some time off here in Europe visiting family and friends, and then you got into a really horrific car accident, which led you basically to a near-death experience. And yeah, I feel very honored to have you on, you talking about this for the first time and on a podcast in public. So I'll pretty much hand it over to you, and maybe for starters share a little bit of what you have been doing before. You're working as a hypnotherapist, and so people get to know you just a little bit before we dive into the deeper story.
Sure, thank you. I am Steph and I live in Bali, and this is where I do all of my work. I have a healing center in Sese, just outside of Canggu in Bali. And this is where I do trainings for people to be hypnotherapists. And I work with all different types of trauma and experiences for people. I've been doing that for around 7 years now. And everything in my work is about, the space between life and death. It goes there so often, wherever we do, when people go through immense trauma and they kind of go into a different type of consciousness and meet different spirits. And it's all very, quite out there stuff, as well as, trauma healing. And I think there's always been a part of me that's, I really believe deeply in God and spirit and all of these amazing things and phenomenons that we hear about. But there was always a part of me that questioned it, just a tiny bit, is it real? When people do these past life experiences, or when people are speaking to the other side, and like I was doing it, all the time with people. But there was always that question in my mind. Is it real, or is it just the science fact of it? It's just, your imagination to process trauma. And I was doing that. I've been doing that for 7 years, and it's been a beautiful journey. And I've had the honor to really work through a lot of people's traumas and experiences that hopefully help them along their journey. And then I had my little baby boy, Jasper, a year and 2 months ago now, and been part of the healing center. He's welcomed clients, he's very much part of the whole healing experience. And the reason why we went to Europe was actually had a hole in his heart that got diagnosed when he was 5 months old. So this was the big trip, to Europe, and I led in bed every single night, praying to God, please, please, please let this whole, like, let the hole heal. And I would say it all the time to God. I'd be like, if there's any danger that's going to my son, anything at all, like, let me take it. I'll take anything tenfold, but just let him be okay. And this is what we have to do when we're bargaining with God. And
Oh gosh.
so anyway, we went to Europe and we went to the best hospital in London, and they did all of the tests and the hole had closed. And so we were just on cloud nine. We were so stoked. We were like, okay, let's go on a family trip to Sicily. Let's go and celebrate. And yeah, we went to Sicily and we had a beautiful time there. And something really interesting, which a big part of the story is that, you know, in Bali, it's legal to not have your baby in a car seat, right? So this is something that was really strong. And yeah, so we were driving, like, and every time Jasper cried, I know it's terrible and I'd probably get a lot of judgment for this, but every time he cried, I took him out of the car seat when we were driving, because it's just so normal in Bali. It's not normal in Germany, not normal in England. It's very illegal. And
Yes.
I know
That's so
it's terrible.
funny.
Oh, I know. And I was always really blasé about it. I was always like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's just a few minutes, right? Till he calms down, and then I put him back in the car seat. Anyway, we finished our beautiful trip in Sicily, and then we get to Germany, and his parents pick us up, and they've got this car seat in the back of the car, and I put him into the car seat, and the first thing I said to my husband was, "We need a different car seat. If we have a car accident, he will die." Like, where did that come from? I have no idea. But I was really like, I've never cared about car seats, right? And then I get there and I look at it, I'm like, no way, he needs a new one. And I make a
Oh,
huge
wow.
fuss. And then we get to his brother's house, and his brother also has a very small child. And he was like, oh, I've got this maxi cozy. It's for a newborn, but it's really good. Let's change the seats. It's not good. And I was like, okay, I feel better now. And every time I was in the car, I was having this panic all the time. I was like, something's going to happen. I just could feel it. I couldn't articulate it. And then, but it wasn't like we're going to have a car accident or anything like this. It was just this feeling. And, you know, having that experience with the car seat, I don't know where that come from, but it was some subconscious or an angel, you know, intervening. And anyway, the day of the accident, Jasper had a bit of a runny nose. We had our best friend coming to stay with us, and it was raining outside. And they were like, oh, let's go and get pizza, you know? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Jasper's a bit sick. Maybe I should stay at home. Maybe, you know, maybe we should just stay. And that was the feeling. But then another weird thing that happened is his parents left that day, and they didn't say goodbye because they didn't want to wake me and Jasper up because we were having a nap. And I was so upset. I was so upset that they left without leaving. And my last message to them was, I can't believe you left. Like, this could be, you never know when the last goodbye would
Oh
be.
my God.
Never messaged anything like that. You know, I'd never messaged that. But I was so upset about it. Yeah, it's so crazy. And then I was like, you know, looking back, I'm like, where did that come from? And then on that day, I was having really weird thoughts. So I was breastfeeding a lot at the time and I was very tired. But I was having these thoughts of like, I just want to sleep. I just want to die. Like, I don't know where these thoughts were coming from. And I was really like trying to be aware of them, but like, you know, witnessing where they were. But there was like this thought of like death and dying in my going through my mind all the time. But I still didn't, you know, be like, okay, we're going to be in a car accident. And this is times where I'm like, I remember lying in the hospital and being like, oh God, there were so many signs, Steph. How did you not know? But yeah, it was
Those
just.
so interesting. Sometimes you don't see the signs, although they are like all around you. It's really weird. It's like almost ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, I tortured myself in this, you know, being like, you're such a powerful person, Steph. You're so intuitive. Like, how did you like I'm always thinking like, no, I don't want to go there. I want to do this. And so, you know, I went through that so many times. Anyway, we get in the car and everything's good. We're driving, we're on the way. Beautiful road, mountain road. I think it's like, I don't know if you've ever been in Bavaria, but they drive like crazy, in my opinion, so fast. And yeah, we're driving, and basically a red car just pulls out. She must have been doing about 120. We were doing 100. And I just remember I was in the middle seat next to my son because I always want to be next to him. Worst place in a car to be, by the way. And the red car, like, basically just drives straight towards us. And I just remember my husband going, "What the fuck?" And then, oof, like,
oh, wow.
And so in that decision of, like, I probably had 1 second to 2 seconds, I just launched myself over my baby. That was, like, probably the worst thing to do. But I launched myself over him because I, like, it's just a mothering instinct, I guess.
I'm getting shivers now. I'm getting goosebumps, you telling this. Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I dived over him, and yeah, and then I just kind of, like, woke up in just, like, the most crazy pain in, like, I could ever imagine, you know? And there was the someone who pulled over was actually, like, a really high doctor. She was in the back of, like, but driving behind us. And yeah, I just remember my husband calling 911, and then our friend who was in the passenger seat had absolutely no damage, like, absolutely incredible. The woman who hit us was completely unconscious. I don't remember any of this. I was just in the back of the seat. And this is when my husband looked back at me and he was like, "Oh shit, like, she's bad, you know?" He just said that I was just, my eyes were rolled back and I was just like, "Help, help, help," you know, like, really not in a good way. Yeah. So I don't remember that. I just remember taking my seatbelt off, lying in the back and being like, "I don't feel my legs." I had this crazy amount of pain and just so much. I was like, "I'm dead. Like, for sure, this is it. Like, there's no way I'm surviving this." And my friend was holding my head in the back of the car. He was like, "You're going to be okay, Steph." But I could see, like, so much fear in his eyes. And I was like, "Please don't let me die. Please don't let me die." You know, and I think that's probably quite traumatic for him as well. But I was like, I always thought up until this point that I didn't fear death. I was like, "Oh, you know, my time is my time. It will all be good." And then in this moment, like, the absolute fear and worry, and, like, I could just see my baby in the car seat looking at me, and I couldn't do anything. Like, he was crying and I was like, "I want to get to him," but I couldn't move my body. And I was like, "Well, Matty, our best friend, I was like, "You've got to tell Jasper that I love him. Tell Jonas that I love him. Like, I'm gone. Like, this is it." Anyway, that's kind of the last thing that I remember. And then I remember the helicopter arriving, and they gave me, I think, fentanyl, like, just like a really strong painkiller. And then that's it. I'm out. And then that's really the last conscious memory I have. So I remembered pretty much everything, because a lot of the time you black out everything, but I remembered the whole. Yeah, and then my son and Jasper, no, sorry, Jonas and Jasper were taken to another hospital. So we were separated and I went to another hospital. And yeah, it was like, that's kind of when all of the, you know, the surgery and everything happened. And just thank God for German healthcare, you know, like, they're just so amazing. There was three helicopters on site within 12 minutes. And, you know, if I didn't have that type of care, I would be dead. Like, if this accident happened in Bali, there's no way I would have survived.
Okay.
And yeah, with the internal bleeding and, you know, everything that I had, it was like, it needed to be done, like, ASAP. So we get to the hospital. I don't remember any of this. And yeah, the doctors are kind of like constantly calling my husband to update him, but he's also kind of out of it because he broke every limb and is trying to look after Jasper, and they're having CT scans and all of this kind of stuff. And my husband just said he just kept getting phone call after phone call, like, "Okay, your wife is bleeding from the liver, from the spleen, from the colon. She's broken her back in two places. She's dissected her artery," which is, like, I don't know if you know this, but this is what causes blood clots and strokes, which is what.
Okay.
So he was just led there, like, "Oh my God, you know, like, what's happening?" And he genuinely didn't know if I was going to survive or not. So I can imagine, you know, being in his position as a husband, like, hearing that. And then, of course, he phoned my mom, and that's, like, my mom's worst nightmare. So they got on a flight directly over. And I was in surgery, I think, for about 10 to 12 hours for the first surgery. And yeah, they just couldn't find where I was bleeding from, so they had to cut me from basically here, all the like from the top of my stomach all the way down to the bottom. Usually they have like really amazing surgery that like keyhole where they can do it. But unfortunately, yeah, they had to go in. And once they finished doing that, they flipped me over and did my back. And yeah, it's just so crazy how like modern medicine is just absolutely incredible. And I'm always very holistic and I love like all of the natural stuff, but there was no way like acupuncture or tinctures were going to help me in this point. I needed full-blown, medical Western medicine. And yeah, just it was so incredible. And it really changes my mind on Western medicine. Not that I was anti it at all, but just like they worked day and night to save my life, like, and I just find that so incredible because I feel that there's in the spiritual community and in the holistic community, there's a lot of like doctors are bad and they just prescribe pills and, and I was just like, I really changed my point of view and like they were there for, 24 hours just obsessed and working to save my life. They didn't know me, but like you could feel their energy of doing that. And I'm like, wow, how inspiring is that? Like that someone's.
That's an interesting observation, if I might jump in here. Because I, well, in general, I would say I feel the same. I'm leaning more towards the holistic and alternative side, and yeah, see like pills prescriptions very critical, but yeah, you definitely have a point there. And it's interesting to hear that from someone like you, and yeah, that you even say that it was really inspiring to see them work
Yeah.
so hard in saving your life.
That dedication, like there was like doctors that were like there for 3 days that didn't leave. Like the passion that you must have to do that. And yeah, so I was really inspired and like I had so much faith and trust within the medical system in the whole way through. Yeah, and so this is kind of where I had this what I would say like a near-death experience. So near-death experience in most cases by definition is where you, for most of the time is you have cardiac arrest or your heart stops. But it can also be through strokes or having amnesia, so like a really long operation, but basically an altered state of consciousness. And yeah, because I was under anesthetic for yeah, such a long time, and the amount of bleeding that I had, and the stroke that I had multiple strokes. So the body releases this hormone of like, okay, she's gonna die, so let's release this. So, and this is when you start having visions, like beautiful visions of like complete peace. And I was like, whoa, my life was so beautiful, like my husband, my baby, like everything that I've accomplished, so much peace. And yeah, I remember kind of hovering outside of my body and looking down at my body. And I was on breathing apparatus, like life support. And I was looking down at myself and I was like, oh, this is bad. This is not great.
Okay, wow.
But the interesting thing is like, I didn't know that I was on breathing support until once I was out of hospital and I said to my mom, I was like, it's weird. I had this vision that I was above myself and I was on life support, but I wasn't on life support, right? Like, 'cause no one told me. And she was like, no, you were in between surgery. And I was like, oh, okay. 'Cause no one told me. And I was like, okay, so maybe that vision was real. And then I started getting way more downloads, like in dreams and things, because I forgot a lot of the stuff because, like those weeks that you're in the hospital, they're just like, it's just morphine after drugs. So you're just like completely out of it. And thank God for painkillers. Like, whoo, they are. So yeah, I started to get a lot of these images coming back. And yeah, I remember being like, okay, this is really not good. And then for these moments, once I was having the surgery, my great grandmother and my great grandfather were there in the room with me, and we were just sat there watching them operate. And my great grandmother, she was like, "Oh, Steph, you've really got yourself in a pickle here. Like, why did you jump over? On, you know, like it wasn't needed." And she told me a lot of messages, and she was like, "I think you're going to be okay, but I just want you to tell your mom," because my mom and her were very close. She was like, "I want you to tell your mom that I love her very much, and when she's in her room at night alone, I'm with her, and I'm always with her." And I was like, "Okay." She was like, "Let her know how much I loved being with her at night, as a baby, because she kind of raised her. And please tell her that there's a gold ring with a red ruby, and it's for her, and she must have it." I was like, "Okay." So anyway, I kind of remember this, and then I go up to the light, and there's these three blue, beautiful, bright beings. Like, there's just like the most beautiful blue, and I don't know who they are, but they're just pure peace and love, and everything is so lovely. And I'm like, "Oh, this is nice." You know, like, no pain, no suffering. It was just like, just the most beautiful state that I could ever explain. And they're just like telepathically asked me, "Well, would you like to stay or would you like to come with us? You have the option to choose now, because you know you've been opting out subconsciously. You've been saying you need to sleep, you need to rest, you're tired of life, you're tired of all the things that have happened." And I'm like, no, I want to stay. I need to go back to my baby. I'm sorry. I like, please don't take what I'm saying seriously before." And that's what I was talking about before, you know, like I was having these thoughts of, yeah, life is hard, and there's so much suffering in the world, you know, with all the things in Gaza. And I was just getting so overwhelmed and saying things like, "I just want to sleep," or "I just want to die for a day," you know, not thinking about the words and the things that I was saying. And now I was like, "No, I really want to stay." And they were like, "Okay, well then make sure that you embody this lesson. Yeah, because we gave you this lesson and you needed this lesson." And I was like, "Oh shit, that's a big lesson to process." And they were like, "We want you to know that you'll heal really fast. You're going to heal so fast, but you have to, you have to just keep positive and not go into this darkness that consumes you, because I do have that, you know, like I do have this part of me that can be, you know, can go into helplessness quite easy." And I was like, okay, I'm going to remember this lesson. I'm going to remember this lesson." And I was just like, I can honestly say, if I didn't have my baby, I probably would have chosen to go into the light, because it was so nice there. And like, this was the moment where I was like, "Whoa, this is real," you know, like. And when my clients go through this, and when they go into this, like when they see the light and when they see all of this, and I've experienced it in hypnosis, and I've experienced it in ayahuasca ceremonies, and you know, I've experienced this kind of, yeah, I don't know what else to say it as this experience, but like, this was so much more tangible. It was so much more real. Like, it really felt like, okay, like this is the truth. Like, there is an afterlife. There are people beyond our physical world that are helping and guiding. And yeah, and that's when I just kind of went back into my body, and then I woke up. And the first thing that I said, I was very kind of out of it after the first surgery. My mom was sat at the end of the bed. Must have been about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was just like, "Am I here? You know, like, am I back, or like, where am I?" My mom was like, "No, you're here, you're alive." And yeah, and then that's kind of where then my consciousness came in, and I had 2 very long weeks completely unable to move in my body. So like, no sleep, just incredible amount of pain for 2 weeks. And to mentally get through that took every part of my, you know, of my skills that I have learned through, you know, through healing and being able to sit in discomfort, simultaneously allowing myself to feel all of the feelings of grief, of pain, of anger, of sadness. And yeah, like, forgiveness was a really big one, because we learned as well, the woman who crashed into us was driving without a license and was high on benzos. So she was driving a car completely illegally. And so to, you know, sit and teach as well forgiveness, Oof, that's a big one to
Yeah.
as a woman who nearly killed me, I'm like, well, how do I forgive that? How can I, forgive someone whose actions were just so thoughtless and that could have killed me, it could have killed my baby. That's still a lot to process and go through. But yeah, like bringing in all of those lessons that I have taught other people, and even yoga, even breathing, even prayer and singing, like I just had to do this all day nonstop to keep myself from actually going mental.
Well, yeah, I can imagine. Just touching back on the forgiveness point. So, what helped you? Because I mean, that's a pretty rough, tough situation, right? How,
Yeah.
yeah, how do you forgive, or how do you start to forgive?
I think number one for me was like I just had to go through the waves. So before when I was in hospital, and I had just been through this huge trauma, like I was kind of in this bliss state and ignorant to life problems, and I was just so grateful to be alive. Like I can't like the feeling of gratitude. Even though I couldn't see, like I couldn't see, I couldn't move, I was just like, oh my God, I'm alive, I'm alive. And there's this deep gratitude for life. And I was like, I hope the woman who hit us is okay. I hope everything that, I love her. I'm sending her forgiveness. And I was kind of like in this, like overly loving, over gratitude, like because it was just bliss to be alive. But then as that kind of began to process, and I was probably on less morphine. Come down into, wow, I'm like really angry. And I was like, as all of these emotions were coming up, I was just like, I just have to allow myself to feel these. Like that's number one. I really have to let myself feel all of this anger. And can you imagine like going through this? I didn't have my husband. I didn't have my baby, and I was breastfeeding at the time. So I had to pump every 2 hours, my boobies because so they didn't explode. And
Oh, wow.
absolutely convinced that I was going to be out of the hospital and breastfeed him in 3 weeks. And like, because he didn't eat for 10 days, he refused to eat because of the separation and the trauma. Have a drip and to keep him alive. I wasn't that I was like, I'm going to breastfeed him again. So for 3 days, my whole stomach was open and I was still like, let's breastfeed, like, my son again. And yeah, so I was in this bliss state of, just I'm in survival, I'm alive, I'm going to see my baby. And, just all of these emotions. And for that long time, I was really in so much love and forgiveness towards this woman. But then, yeah, as consciousness came back and I went to rehab, and that's where I think on week five, we got the news from the blood report from the police that she was illegally driving on this medicine. And she didn't have a license. And then suddenly a lot of anger came through me. And I was just like, no, I don't forgive her. There was so much anger in her. I was like, you've taken my vision. You've taken so much precious things away from me. Like I was put on a medication that I can't breastfeed or get pregnant on. So, I wasn't able to breastfeed Jasper. And for me, this was the biggest emotional pain ever. And I was so angry, and I was like, okay, Steph, you just have to let yourself feel this anger. And I was saying very vile things, like how much I hated her. I was punching a pillow, I asked my husband to go out of the room with Jasper, and I was like, I just need to feel like I'm killing someone right now. And I just let that anger like really go through me. And then as I let that anger go through me, it kind of turned to what was she going through? Like someone to drive without a license, to drive that fast, to be on drugs while they're driving. Like there must have been something going on in her life. And I tried to connect to her energy and her soul, and it was just blank. There was just nothing there. And I was like, wow, her consciousness is very, very low. And I was like, so like And I would say for sure, and I always say this to my clients, forgiveness is a journey. You can't just say, I forgive you, and then everything goes away. Because I do forgive her, because, on the grand scheme of things, we're all alive. Whatever her journey is was hers, and I'll never know. But then there's moments where I'm really angry and I don't forgive. And that will be a journey. And I have no pressure on myself for that. That maybe in 3 months, maybe in 1 year, it will be total. I forgive like fully 100%. But right now I'm up and down. And I know that that's part of the journey. And I feel like having the tools and the knowledge and the things that I have known and learned helps me navigate that, because otherwise I would be lost of like, I want to forgive, but I'm just too wrapped in anger, and like anger is exhausting. So I let myself feel it, process it, let it turn into reason, and then, move on from that. So I just feel like it's a journey of forgiveness. A part of me was like, I can't believe she hasn't like wrote me an email or a letter to be like, hey, sorry for nearly killing you. But yeah, I haven't received anything. So yeah, I mean, she'll be going to court, and she'll get whatever she deserves in whatever way. But our paths were meant to cross in some bizarre way, and I just really feel that all of this pain that me and my family went through, like, it has to be for something. I don't want to just let it go as this, as it was terrible. It has to change us, and it will always change us. And I feel like the 1st of June is like a rebirth for me. I'm gonna celebrate it as another birthday, because I was reborn. And I don't want to pretend that like now I'm just suddenly like this glowing angel that's walking around like, oh my God, life is so beautiful, because I'm it's not like that. Like, you have life-changing experiences, but you're still human, and you still have like all of those, the density of human existence that comes in, and I still snap and I'm still tired. Like, these things happen.
I think that's all very healthy. First of all, seeing this forgiveness process really as a journey or as a process, and not being like, okay, I'm done with that. I've forgiven or I don't forgive, but not having these black or white ways to look at it, but being in this gray zone and having these up and downs. And the same for what you said about, on one hand, having these very deep, high level, high spirited experience, and on the other side, still being here in this human body, living your earthly life and being caught up in things, snapping at people sometimes. And I believe, honestly, I mean, we're both familiar, we both practice Tantra, traditional Tantric Hatha Yoga. And that's the beauty that Tantra teaches us, right? That we don't have to be one, but we're both, and we're here in this life for a reason. So we should live both. And I think having these very mundane moments is a sign of that we're grounded, to be honest.
Yeah, that's something that I really took away from this, is because when I was, I don't know why, but I started to use the word bored a lot. I was getting like quite bored when we, it was very mundane. Even though we were traveling, it was like we were doing the same thing. And it was actually like boredom is such a beautiful thing. And I'm like, well, I really miss being bored now, because it means that everything is very calm, and there's like, it's a good state to be, and we can choose to be in the upward spiral of bored, or we can choose to go in the downward spiral of like, and yeah, and I feel that that is, it's been such a beautiful lesson. Like, we're in this tiny little village where there's nothing happening right now, and I'm just like, I'm bored. Oh my God, I love it. Thank you, God, for bored, because it means that everything is okay. Everyone's okay. There's nothing to worry about. We're just bored. It's all good.
That's a cool way to look at it. I've never seen a boredom like that, and I loved how you just describe it, like be at the upwards end or the downwards end, and that makes such a huge difference.
Because on the spiral of emotions, where you've got love as the highest frequency, and you have victim and shame as the lowest frequency, boredom sits right in the middle. Like that's, it's on the going up or going down. And that's what I kept remembering as well, and being like, no, boredom is just like, it's, there's very close to calm if you allow yourself to be in that, and just having the acceptance that life is up and down. And, you know, you just mentioned the tantra, and I used that so much. You know, when I woke up from the operation the first time, like, my vision was like, if I looked at you, half of your face would be missing. There was black holes.
Oh gosh.
I couldn't, my right hand, you know, I had no control of my right hand. And for those 2 weeks, it was just petrifying, because it was like, I had an epidural put in my spine, and I had that for 7 days. So I couldn't move my lower body for 7 days. And I still tried to walk with an epidural, and, like, you know, having a broken spine and all of that jazz and broken ribs. So, I was very, very determined, and everyone kept saying, Steph, you're so positive. You're so positive. And I was like, well, I have to be, you know. I started listening to the Bible. Like, I was like, okay, what do I need to do? I was like, Jesus Christ, the consciousness, anything, like, please come and heal me. I'm so open to anything and everything in this moment. And I actually really, really connected to God, and having that realization. Oh, sorry, something just made a noise.
Oh, good.
Having this connection and listening to, for some reason, listening to the Bible just, like, really helped me. I didn't want to listen to anything else. I've never really been into the Bible, but there you go. And but the tantra of the meditation there, like, I would just close my eyes, and just this constant reminder of everything is temporary. Like, the situation is temporary. My body is temporary, and I can heal this. Like, I can go in and heal this. And when the doctors came to me, and it was honestly for 2 weeks, it was just bad news after bad news. And I was like really trying to take it so well and be like, okay, everything's positive, everything's okay. My mom didn't leave my side, and my mom's in the medical, she's a nurse and midwife. I was in ICU, so you're not really supposed to have visitors, only for like 2 hours of the day, but she was allowed to stay the whole time because I refused. And and I just kept getting bad news. You know, they were like, okay, you've actually dissected three arteries, not one. So we're really worried that you're going to have like more strokes. Then I had an allergic reaction to the heparin, which is like a blood thinner. And it was just, you know, constant things that they just kept, every time the doctor come in, I was like, oh my God, I can't take any more bad news. You know, I really just want some good news. But yeah, it didn't get better, but it got better. And then they were like, okay, so you're also showing signs of having epilepsy, so we're going to give you this medicine as well. And I was like, I can't, like, please. I actually at one point said to the doctors, I was like, unless I'm going to die, I don't want to hear anything. Just do what you need to do. Give me whatever you need to give. Like, I don't want to hear anything. Like, please, no more. And they gave, and I asked for a picture of my brain cell, like the arteries that were in the back, because they did an MRI scan, and they gave me a picture of it. And I just sat there for hours staring at this picture, and like, you could see where it is dissected and ripped, right? And I was just staring at it, and I was going into the brain cell, and I was like, heal, heal, heal. You know, I was like,
oh, wow.
I was going into like the, as if I was like a blood vessel. And I just did it for hours, because I had heard that this, you know, I was using my self-hypnosis. And I just did that for hours.
So just focusing on the body parts, on the cells.
Yeah.
And sending energy there.
Exactly. I just did for as long, like every waking moment I was doing that, speaking to my mom, listening to her read, yeah, and that's basically all I did for the first week. And I don't even think I spoke to my husband or my baby, because I had no energy. I was like, if I see them, I'm going to have a breakdown. I just need to know that they're okay. That's all I need to know. And then I didn't speak to them until like maybe the second week, when kind of I was more in my body. And yeah, at one point I was just so out of it from all the drugs they gave me, I started refusing. I was like, no, I need to have consciousness now. Like, I need to be somewhat here. And that's when I started refusing like the morphine. And then my body went through this huge purge. And for like, I think 3 days, all I did was puke. Like I just puked, and every puke I did, I was just imagining, it's like an ayahuasca. I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but you purge, and I was just like, all of this medicine was coming out, and these very nasty smells. I know it's very graphic, but like I was just like, okay, I'm getting rid of all of this stuff that's in my body.
Yes, it's very cleansing.
Yeah, and I was telling my mom, she was holding my hand and holding the sick bag in front of me, and I was just like imagining all of these demons coming out of my body. I was just imagining like the darkness, the anger, like everything. And I was like, okay, I'm welcoming the pain. I'm welcoming the pain as healing. The more I feel the pain, the more I'm healing. And this is just what I kept telling myself over and over and over again. Until yeah, eventually I kind of started coming more around. I had the second surgery. And just slowly things started to get better. And yeah, and it's just crazy what the human mind and the human body can go through. And you know, when I received the news that the medicine that I was going to be put on for blood thinners was yeah, I couldn't breastfeed or get pregnant on, you know, that was like a really big piece of news for me. And my best friend was there at the time, and she just held me crying. And I was like, I just need to feel like all of this grief, you know, like that this beautiful bond, it's really sacred, you know, breastfeeding a baby. This beautiful bond between me and my baby has been completely severed. And I know that we'll get back to a beautiful relationship, but that was really, really tough for me to process. And yeah, it was just something taken away from me. And I was just like, the whole time, I was like, this is temporary. I have to be in acceptance. And this was something that was running through my mind all the time. Like, you have to be in acceptance. You have to be in trust, Steph. Like, you have to. And there wasn't one time, and I'm really proud of myself for this, but there wasn't one time that myself in those that month that I was in hospital go into, why me? Why did this happen to me? This is so terrible. Oh my God, I don't deserve this. I really managed to just stay in acceptance because I knew that that would stop my healing. I knew that if I was a victim, right? Because this woman hit us because of her decision, because she was driving illegally, because she was on drugs, like she did this to us. We were a victim of her. But I processed that when I was in rehab, but I just knew that it would stop my healing process. So I used a lot of my anger, and I turned that anger into purpose. And I was like, that anger was like, no, fuck this. I'm going to get up and walk. The doctor said, I'm not going to walk today. I'm going to walk today. Like, fuck her. I'm going to do this. I need my baby. I need to get home. I need to walk. And then I was able to move into it. And I feel like that's, the anger was really purposeful for me. And I needed that anger, but in the same way, it was very exhausting, but it pushed me, you know, it pushed me to get up and do all of those things. And I envisioned myself, I remember being on day three, I remember telling my mom, I'm like, in 3 weeks, I'm going to be in the gym. In 3 weeks, I'm going to be in the gym. And my mom was like, I don't think so. I was in the gym 3 weeks later, you know?
Wow. And
really, like, I pushed, like, the pain that you feel, or the pain that I felt, was so excruciating. But I just don't know how. I just stayed so mentally strong. And I really feel that was from years of doing yoga, years of, you know, doing really painful work on myself, shadow work and meditation and meeting parts of myself that I didn't like, and ayahuasca of sitting, you know, in being nauseous and being in pain. You know, I knew that I just had this constant reminder of, you're going to be okay. It doesn't last forever. And really empowering. And I found a new strength in myself that I didn't really know. I knew it was there, but like now I really know. And I just feel now I'm really capable of doing anything, you know, if I can get through that. And I really hope that people know that, that if there's anything, like, the power of your mind is so incredible. Like, I know that if I had allowed myself to go into complete chaos and despair, my body and my mind wouldn't have been able to heal at the pace that I did.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing. Well, I don't want to end this, but I just want to acknowledge, thank you for sharing all of this so far. It's really incredible to hear. And first of all, I want to say you really can be so proud of yourself because that is, yeah, I mean, you are so strong. And looking at you right now, you're so radiant, so alive. And I prepping the interview this morning, I just went back to your stories and it said 8 weeks ago. And I was like, wow, I can't believe that was just 8 weeks ago. You being in the hospital, you know, just doing your first stories after 2 weeks, I think, in ICU, talking to people. And I was like, this is amazing. You really have this healing power within you, and you really used it for your healing. So I really want to acknowledge that. And yeah, I want to say it to anyone listening that you've really, really done, wow, an incredible healing job on yourself here. And I mean, I can't compare because I've never been through something like that, but it's really, you touched on it, like having the real life experience of a lot of the practices that we do, that they actually work
Yes, they do.
when, yeah, when you need them. And practice is something I just want to stay with that topic for a little bit because you can speak to the maybe the practices that you did from the hypnotherapist or hypnotherapy side, but you know, speaking to the yoga, traditional tantric hatha yoga or tantra, it's not a yoga that distracts you, but it's a yoga that done right leads you right into yourself and leads you right where you have to look. And that's the hard thing. And I believe that's probably why a lot of people avoid it, or maybe they do a moon class, like, you know, a really class that's very calm, that has longer holds, that really invites you to pause and be with yourself, be with your emotions. And it's not always easy. But it's so incredible to hear that these practices do work. I mean, I know from my own experience that they work, but going through such a scenario as you just did, it's really incredible. It speaks to the tradition, to all that we've studied and are teaching ourselves.
You know, to be, and that's the most amazing thing is like I really called in those practices. Like I called in the sages, I called in, you know, everything that I needed. It was there. It was all like really deep inside of me to get through that and know that it was all temporary and know that there was a higher purpose and a higher plan and to focus on that and to allow myself to go into the pain and the emotion and not hide from it or run from it or go into the victim was really truly like the most purposeful thing and the most healing thing for me. Without those practices, I don't think that I would have been able to heal as fast.
Can you or would you like to give us a glimpse into your daily practice before the accident?
Having a baby, it probably wasn't as daily as I would have liked. But I mean, for since I was 20 years old, I've been having some form of, you know, meditation or yogic practice. And the yeah, but before the accident, it was really just whenever I had time of meditation, and that was just processing the day. That's all I had time for, in all honesty, as a mama. But you know, just being able to sit with my emotions of the day and process and go into them. When I really have time, of course, I do, you know, long holds of being uncomfortable. And I feel like that was a really big thing for me in yoga was just, it doesn't have to be a complex pose by any means, but just like holding a pose where every part of you wants to escape. You know, when you pose for like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes, and like your mind is like, I want to leave, I want to leave. And yoga trains you to just sit with that very, very uncomfortable feeling and just be like, okay, there's pain in my body. Okay, it's uncomfortable. How can I ease into it? And I did that actually, like, I think the day before the accident, I had a really long yoga practice and I was doing that. And I was like, how long can I sit in this forward fold without having a reaction? And
Wow.
yeah, so it was very interesting that all happened that way. But yeah, it's just So crazy how things can change, you know, in a blink of an eye.
Yes. Yeah, I was really shocked when I heard about your accident because just a couple of days before, I had a really beautiful hypnotherapy session with one of your trainees.
Oh.
And yes, and it was my first hypnotherapy session, and I went into it with mixed feelings. I think a lot of people do because you never know what you're digging up. And I was like, oh, I want to do this. I know I have to do this because I'm on a one cycle here. So
Yeah.
derived from Yantra Yoga, and I was going into one cycle a month, so I really wanted to start that chapter with a clean slate, and I knew I had to do this. But yeah, I was a little bit nervous, but it was a beautiful session, and I had really good insights, but it was nothing terrifying. It didn't throw me backwards, so I was really like happy. I was really feeling good afterwards. So thank you for all the work that you were doing.
Oh,
Yeah.
thank you.
I
Yeah.
can only recommend Steph and her trainees to anyone interested in a hypnotherapy session. I'll
No.
link to everything in the show notes. I just want to throw it in here. So we'll leave a link to your website, to your Instagram, which I recommend following you. I've been following you for a few years now, and I think your content is really, really valuable.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yes. But where were we before I started off on this little anecdote of myself?
I think we were talking about the
I
practice,
mean,
self practices to stop, to kind of allow yourself
true.
to take time ultimately. And yeah, so if anyone's listening, like, you know, take up a practice that allows you to feel, and anything that you're running away from is the medicine. You know, anything that feels uncomfortable is the space that you need to, you know, to sit in, and having someone to be safe with to experience that sometimes. And that's something else that I really embodied and learned when I was, I think, the second day in ICU. I started having a panic attack. I don't usually have panic attacks or anything like this, but obviously in that situation I kept waking up and being like, where am I, where's my baby? And it was all a lot, and my heart rate was going up, and the doctor ran in and he was like, you know, Miss Sargent, you need to calm down. I read on your form that you're a therapist, so what advice would you give yourself now that you need to calm down? I was like, well, first of all, I don't feel safe, so I need something that will give me safety, because I can't heal if I don't feel safe. And he was like, what safety can I give you right now? I was like, get my mom here right now. And then that was like something that really dropped, and that is so true. Like, I didn't have anything. I had nothing around me that felt safe, and I was so high and in so much pain. I needed someone and something to be my anchor. And for me, in that moment, was my mom. And that just shows, is like the same as a therapist and client relationship, is that there's so many times that we hold so much pain and fear. And we need someone. We can only go so far by ourselves. Like, we need other people to heal, to feel safe. And that was such a, you know, such a big lesson for me, as though I know that and I teach that, but I had to really feel it. I was like, for me to heal right now, I need someone else to be holding me, to be there. And often I'm that person in other people's healing. And yeah, so going through therapy and finding someone that you really feel safe with to process emotions and experiences, we're not meant to do it alone. We're not meant to go and do all of this painful work completely by ourselves. And I think quite often we try to, and we come up against blocks. So we need that person to hold our hand and help us.
I love that you're bringing that up because it's so true. And especially when we're an expert in a field, you know, you as a hypnotherapist, we always think, well, I know the tools, I know what to do, I can do it on my own. But yeah, there is this, yeah, the safety or this connection piece in there. And sometimes we just need someone to guide us.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And like, there were so many times, like, the psychologist kept coming in to see me, and she was like, so it's really important that you feel your feelings. I was like, I know all of this. I know all of the things that I need to do. And I just was like not connecting with her, because she just kept telling me like things I already knew. But then she said something which, like, this human connection dropped. And she was like, you know, I've been in your situation. I've been led in this bed and I've been through this. And then I was like, the connection with her just suddenly landed. And that for me as a therapist reminded me how much empathy, like, we have to hold. And of course, we always make it around our clients, but when there's something that someone has embodied, then and they create this safety, it was like then everything she was saying, I started to connect to more, because I if she had done this, been through this, and she had had this, and then suddenly everything that she was saying was like helping me so much more, and I didn't have this kind of like ego pushing against her. And yeah, and then again, that just reminded me of my own, you know, of my own work of like really being with the person that you're with and having empathy and, you know, sometimes being like, I know that feeling. Because quite often in a therapy, in a therapeutic setting, like the therapist has the upper hand and is always giving the advice. But when you can come back down into that and you know, have that equality of no one's healing anyone here, we're just having a human connection. And I was like, wow, that was again, like I try to do that, but then again and really embody that again was really powerful for me. To realize like how much I connected with her when she let down her guard and opened up to me.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I believe that you will go out as a so much stronger hypnotherapist. I mean, I believe you were already a very good, very strong hypnotherapist, but now having this experience, yeah,
Yeah,
that will
definitely
really.
embodiment of so much pain and learning of self-healing. You know, I practice, I preach all the time, like self-healing mindset, you know, and I really had to experience that and go through that. And that's what I'm using this for, is spirit, God, whatever we want to call it, put me through this as a huge lesson. And I have to turn that pain into some form of purpose to you know, whether it's on my hypnotherapy trainings, whether it's in workshops, whether it's just talking about it. But I've had so many people write to me and be like, your story has inspired me so much, because like you've stayed so positive. Like you've really put into perspective how life can change in a moment and how we need to like be so present and grateful and do the work and you know, just know that anything can change. And so yeah, it's been nice to receive so much positivity from sharing our pain as a family, because it gives purpose to the experience. Yeah, so hope and I feel I'm teaching a course in February to train hypnotherapists, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of embodiment and a lot of things going on, powerful things in that course. So I'm really excited to just keep sharing, you know, just keep sharing the power of our mind, of life, of healing. It's been a fascinating journey for sure.
Yes, I can imagine. Wow.
Healing the relationship between me and my son has been very, you know, a very interesting and painful but beautiful experience as well. And I know that I had to go through that because I work with so many children and parents. And I now speak from a place of wisdom when I'm helping those families, that I know what they've been through, as opposed of textbook, this is what happens, you know, this is how we help. So I hope that the empathy and the love that I have will, you know, outpour to every client and person that I work with from now on.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at my notes here, and we could go on forever, I think.
I
But is
know.
there just one thing I'm really curious about? I would love to touch on if your time allows. Is, you know, being in the depth of this experience, and were there things, you were speaking about, well, seeing these angels right at the edge and having these downloads and dreams. Were there things that you knew from before? So have you had visions similar, but maybe on a lower scale, or was it completely new?
About having the accident.
No, about what happened afterwards, when you were in these higher states. So was this all new, or did you see like parallels? Did you see that you had certain visions already before? Or
It was all very new. It was all very new. But I would say like it was a very kind of a similar experience like when I had had ayahuasca experiences, and I got a lot of downloads and a lot of visions from there. But like I said, this one was it was so much more tangible, so much more real in this space. And it's such a hard thing to explain, like because it's so out of world experience. But the visions and the downloads and the things that I saw, I've never experienced before. Like I've never touched upon that in that level. You know, in meditations and stuff, you go to, and hypnosis, you go to these types of places and spaces. But, and I've had clients as well that have gone to this place and you know, that space between life, like life between death, they've got that in another consciousness, and they've told me about what they've seen, but I've never had it to that extent. Did that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely. It did. Thank you. Perfect that you got it. I mean, that I could make it understandable.
So it was
Yes.
all very new, and that's what I mean. It's hard for me to put into words, and I hope like the more I talk about it, the more it becomes, you know, being able to speak it out loud, like the experiences, but definitely from it, it's just such a powerful, powerful thing to know that there's forces working for us, and you know that when we pass over, when we finish our life in this body, that there is a place that we go to, that there is eternal. You know, whether it's heaven, whatever you want to call it, however you want to, whatever religion you're in, it's the same thing. It's a frequency, and just touching on that just gives me so much peace and hope, you know, that whatever happens, there's something so much beyond us, and then that also gives me so much gratitude for my physical body. And I feel like so many of us take for granted, and you know, and the things that we do to our body, you know, like, and how much hate we speak to our body sometimes. And it's really just the most beautiful machine to express ourselves in life. And I remember, you know, when I was looking at my legs and I wanted them to move in the hospital, and I was like, how did I ever say horrible things to my legs? You know, like, oh, they're chubby, or oh, I have cellulite. I'm like, they worked, they moved. Like, they're so beautiful, they're so amazing. And now I have this huge scar on my stomach, and I look at it, and I most of the time I see power, and I see grace, and I see wisdom, and sometimes that, again, that density of human, like, you know, the heaviness of like, oh my God, it's so disgusting, like this looks so bad, and I'm like, that, you know, that is just, that is not what we need, you know. And I really want to come back into that deep, deep space of self-love, of our bodies are really just an expression, and we get so caught up in what we look like and what we're doing. And I feel like it's a real toxin of the world, you know, like with, you know, all the filters and everything that's happening. That's a whole other subject. But what I'm trying to say is that try not to hate your body, because it is so powerful, and whatever we do, it's like always working for us. Whatever we give it, whatever we put in it, whatever happens, like how it can heal and look after us is just amazing, and not to take it for granted. Because if you hate your legs, or you say these things and then you lose them, I can guarantee you that you'll bloody love them when they're gone.
Thank you for this powerful reminder. And it's so true. We often say bad things about ourselves, be that our bodies or how we behave, and yeah, without really thinking about it. And yeah, your experience really shows us what talking to yourself positive, thinking in a positive way can do, not just for the healing process, but for your life. And
absolutely, like when we're speaking things out, we don't realize the impact of what's happening. Like we really do create our own reality to a certain point and what we do and say. So yeah, it's just really important that we're mindful of that. And if you do have a very toxic relationship and you are saying things, so if you're someone who are, you know, is quite negative and says quite negative things, you know, that's an opportunity for them to dive in and find out what that is and heal it, because you can heal it. And that's the most amazing thing, to be able to have a loving relationship a lot of the time with yourself and people around you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Steph, I'm in awe of you, how you went through all of this. And yeah, really, how much strength and positivity and warmth you vibrate.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
Yeah.
Articulated so much. Well, in that, it was the first time doing it. I'm quite proud of myself that I didn't cry, and then I managed to talk about it with at least power. So I hope, yeah, I'm really grateful for this opportunity, and I hope that whoever it, you know, it touches, to have that powerful reminder that life is so beautiful and such a gift, and that it is a choice every single time. Every time we wake up, what a blessing that is to move our body, to breathe, to be able to choose love, whatever it is, you know, wherever we are. Things will always get better wherever we are, even if it's a shit day, a shit month. Like it never rains forever.
Yes, so true. Thank you so much. It's really an honor to have you and to, you know, to be the first podcast where you're speaking about this.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being such a radiant living example here, such a radiant human being.
Thank you, my love. Well, take care.